Meredith Small wrote in The New Scientist in an article that was titled Trouble in Paradise about studies that had been done on cortisol levels, kind of the stress hormone that's released in children. They went through, they measured cortisol levels, they took family background and family history, and they started to learn what was going on all in all of these children's lives, and then started to correlate it to things that they were experiencing. And first of all, they just found out that stress in children can remarkably stunt their development, basically all of their development, physical growth, mental development, reproductive development as they go on into maturity. It stunts all of that. There's even some thought, and this will just have to be played out as time goes on, more research done, but there's even some theories that some of the issues and problems that we face in midlife can go back to particularly stressful moments in kids' lives. And it's really a remarkable article. But when it started looking at the different stressors in kids' lives, you kind of had a couple of categories. So poverty and schoolwork, and then all of the conflicts that kids have with each other, even bullying, you know, examples like that, moved the cortisol levels very, very little. But what they did find in their research is family problems, serious family problems. That's what dramatically affected the way that kids were able to not only handle stress and deal with stress, but also then those very, very deleterious long-term effects. So things such as mom and dad fighting or dad leaving or grandma or grandpa hitting one of the children. And it was a big, big deal. I didn't really realize this, but I knew it because I'm an adult. Adults are just endlessly capable of adapting to stress. What I guess I didn't realize until I'd gone through the article is that for a child, every stressful event, they encounter it like it's the first time it's ever happened. It's like their mind and their body doesn't record this database of all of these stressful moments like we have as adults. And we enter and it's like, oh, okay, well, I dealt with this 3 months ago. I know how to handle it. They don't do that. They don't process it like that. And so it carries with it lots of psychological difficulties. It carries with it a lot of physical difficulties. When you look in the Bible, you've got a lot of families that really, really struggled for one reason or the other. But I can't think of another example that I could pull up in my mind of people who struggled worse than the family of David. And that's basically what this lesson is about tonight, the family of David. And the struggles that David's family encountered all go back to one seminal moment, and that was his sin with Bathsheba. In 2 Samuel chapter 12, I ask you to go to 2 Samuel chapter 12. When you read verses 10 and 11, this is where the announcement is first made. Now therefore the sword will never depart from your house, because you've despised me, you've taken the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be your wife. Thus says the Lord, behold, I will raise up adversity against you from your own house. I'll take your wives before your eyes, I'll give them to your neighbor, and he shall lie with your wives in the sight of the sun. And as we make it through the rest of this account, and you don't have to go far at all, this begins to happen. And the one son that I'm going to focus on tonight is the son Absalom. That actually begins in chapter 13. So it's announced in chapter 12, and already in chapter 13 it begins. So let's go to chapter 13 and verse 1. In chapter 13 verse 1, we'll kind of start to set up the whole, I think it's the whole reason why everything unfolds. That may be pushing a little bit too far in some circumstances on my case. However, it most definitely is what gets the ball rolling for all of these terrible effects in the life of Absalom, and then as David has to cope with it. So 2 Samuel chapter 13, starting in verse 1, after this, Absalom, the son of David, had a lovely sister whose name was Tamar, and Amnon, the son of David, loved her. Amnon was so distressed over his sister Tamar that he became sick, for she was a virgin, and it was improper for Amnon to do anything to her. But Amnon had a friend whose name was Jonadab, son of Shemaiah, David's brother. Now Jonadab was a very crafty man. He said to him, "Why are you, the king's son, becoming thinner day after day? Will you not tell me?" And Amnon said to him, "I love Tamar, my brother Absalom's sister." So the two of them concocted this plan where Amnon would pretend to be sick and tell David that, you know, send my sister in to prepare cakes for me and feed me because I'm sick, can't do it myself. He takes the opportunity and he rapes her. And then the account says that after he did that, he hated her for it. He hated her. In the account, and even after it's being explained in 2 Samuel chapter 13, it makes a very vivid statement that he hated her just as badly after that act that equaled the amount of love, how lovesick he was before the fact. Now where Absalom comes in is that he set out to kill Amnon because of it. And he did. And from that moment on, you begin this multi-chapter kind of descent into some very, very difficult times for Absalom. So we ask the question, is the child safe? Think about some of this for just a second, and then we'll eventually get down after a few minutes into what we'll want to talk about and propose for all of us, hopefully, to help all of us develop, but especially, you know, since these were the sons of David, David was probably, I doubt David was any older than my age. So if you think about the age of my children, those would have been about the age of these people in 2 Samuel chapter 13. Said another way, they just weren't people, they weren't kids who were very old. So the kids that are in the audience tonight can learn a lot from what transpires in Absalom's life. Just to lay out some thoughts. First of all, Absalom was the third son of David. He was loved by David, as we'll see before we end tonight. Born of tremendous privilege, but he's going to revolt against his father. Now again, I can't say that it was his sister being assaulted that would cause him ultimately to go against his father, but definitely it was a leading cause for him to do it. In 2 Samuel chapter 15, the whole account between Absalom and David and everyone else only lasts from chapter 13 to chapter 15. And not all of that space is devoted to the two of them and the conflict between them. But David has to flee Jerusalem in 2 Samuel chapter 15. Now he comes back and the account resumes. But this was all a fulfillment. Again, all of this trouble was in fulfillment to what was promised him in 2 Samuel chapter 12 and verses 10 and 11. And I'll tell you what, if I had time tonight, go read Psalm 3. It's only about 8 verses long. It is the first psalm that we have attributed to a writer, and it's the first psalm that we have what's called a superscription, which is, again, tradition. It's not divine inspiration. But the tradition says Psalm 3 was written by David, and it was written when Absalom basically ran him out of Jerusalem. And you can see the thought process in David's heart when he writes Psalm 3. This was, I mean, you know, you consider stress. I mean, this was stress for both of them. We get a little bit further, though, and I just make one point, as this rebellion is building, Absalom has a direction that he has to go. He builds, he curries favor with the people. Again, we'll see little bits and pieces of this as in just the next few minutes. But he curries favor with the people. And eventually it comes down to the point, if you're going to take over the kingdom, you've got to take over the kingdom. And he had a couple of advisors giving him advice. And he chose the advice that put him head on getting thousands of men and going right after David. I mean, facing him right down. And he died. In fact, if you'll look in 2 Samuel chapter 18, a lot of this account honestly may not be extremely familiar to you, but this part will be. 2 Samuel chapter 18, look in verse 9. So then Absalom met the servants of David, and Absalom rode on a mule. The mule went under the thick boughs of a great terebinth tree, and his head caught in the terebinth. So he was left hanging between heaven and earth, and the mule which was under him then went on. And Joab, one of the commanders, one of David's commanders, comes and takes his life, and the people kill him. In all of this, when David finds out, when the people come to tell him about Absalom's death, yes, a child who was a problem child, yes, a child who had usurped the throne, had even run him out of his own city, he still loved him. Arguably, he loved him inexplicably, but arguably he loved him more than any of the other children that he had. And believe me, once you collate all of the different accounts of David's children, there's about 20 of them. About 20 of them from a bunch of different wives. He loved him so much. And he asked the question, is my son Absalom safe? The King James Version and the New King James Version and the NIV, interestingly, all use the word safe. The rest of the versions, as best as I could find, use the word well. Is the child well versus is the child safe? There's something about the oomph of the word safe that makes this really, really thought-provoking. Is he safe? What's kind of ironic is that the word Absalom, if you take off the prefix A-B, Ab, you have Shalom, so peace. Ab in Hebrew means my father is, so his name literally meant my father is peace. And that was sadly not how this young man's life unfolded. And regrettably, the answer to David's question, is the young man safe, was no. And I want you to turn in 2 Samuel chapter 18 and verse 33. And I want you to see, look at David's reaction, because the reaction that David had, you never forget. Poetry has been written about the reaction of the news of David's son's death. In verse 33, he just found out in 32. Then the king was deeply moved. He went up to the chamber over the gate and he wept. And as he wept, he said this. And this is what's been so memorable in people's mind. Oh, my son Absalom, my son Absalom. If only I had died in your place. Oh, Absalom, my son, my son. That is a father's love. I don't mean any disrespect, but as the old timers would say, Absalom was a real rascal. And we're going to see that as we step through. Because we're here to ask the question, you know, is the young man safe? Maybe we could change it a little bit to, is the child safe? When we talk about is the child safe, is the child safe? Are they going to be safe? In three wide areas. Are they going to be physically safe? Are they going to be morally safe? Are they going to be spiritually safe? And interestingly, when you start looking at what Absalom did, which is what we'll do in the rest of the lesson, we got nine little snippets that we'll run through. When you start looking, you can see that if I do these, I can be safe. So we'll talk about what Absalom did, and then we'll present some different ideas for everyone to consider. So in getting started, first of all, you will be safe. You will be safe. This is before we actually step into the account itself, but you will be safe if you use your great potential, your privilege, your talents, your opportunities for godly pursuits, not for selfish pursuits. 2 Samuel chapter 3, verse 3, I referenced it earlier. That's essentially the birth order of David's children, at least when he was in Hebron. And it tells us this, that Absalom indeed was the third son that was born. He was born, again, of great privilege. I also have, I believe I do, I don't have, in chapter 18, verse 17, this is after Absalom had died. They come along, as his head was stuck in the boughs of the tree, they kill him, and the third son of David, almost the ruler of Judah, or at that point, of Israel, almost ended up being buried in a hole in the forest with just rocks covering him. Use everything that you've got. Your potential, those talents, use all of that for the glory of God. I like this in Matthew chapter 13, and it made me think about this in a different way that, you know, you just forget about it sometimes. In Matthew chapter 13, verse 8, of course, it's the parable of the sower. And we kind of focus on memorizing the soils and what happens in the soil. I do the exact same thing. Matthew chapter 13, verse 8, it's the good soil. But one thing that I'm kind of tempted to forget, is verse 8. But others fell on good ground. What happened to the good ground? Well, it yielded a crop, some 100-fold, some 60, and some 30. If you will use your life and not do a selfish pursuit, but rather instead look for a godly pursuit using potential and privilege and talents and all of that, you can be the soil that can develop 100-fold or 60-fold or 30-fold. 1 Peter chapter 4 and verses 10 and 11. Just notice this. 1 Peter chapter 4 verses 10 and 11. In thinking about what I can do good in the service of the Lord. 1 Peter chapter 4 verse 10. As each one of us has received a gift, minister it to one another as good stewards of the manifold grace of God. Yes, in the context, and we'll see another place too. In the context, those gifts could be spiritual gifts, which we understand that we don't have now. But they're also just talents. They're just gifts that people have. And thinking about that, well, we can minister to one another as good stewards of the manifold grace of God. If anyone speaks, let him speak as the oracles of God. If anyone ministers, let him do it as with the ability which God supplies. Then in all things, God may be glorified through Jesus Christ, to whom belong the glory and the dominion forever and ever. That's what we use our life for, because that's going to be the most valuable. Now, secondly, let's actually get into the account itself. 2 Samuel chapter 13. Let's look in 2 Samuel chapter 13 now. Each one of these now, we'll just kind of survey a little bit as we go along in the account. 2 Samuel chapter 13, and let's notice in verse 22. 2 Samuel chapter 13, looking in verse 22, as far as Absalom is concerned, keep your anger in check. So you could say that the first issue, and I did say the first issue was the fact that Tamar was assaulted. But really and truly, as far as Absalom is concerned, the first issue was and always will be, what was his reaction to it? 2 Samuel chapter 13, we'll just read verse 22. Absalom spoke to his brother Amnon, neither good nor bad, for Absalom hated Amnon because he had forced his sister Tamar. You look down a little bit further in the chapter, look down in verse 32. Look down in verse 32. Then Jonadab, the son of Shemaiah, David's brother, answered and said, "Let not my lord suppose that they have killed all of the young men, the king's sons, for only Amnon is dead. For by the command of Absalom, this has been determined from the day that he forced his sister Tamar." So for all of this time, and it was some length of time, he just plotted and plotted and waited and killed him. Don't let your anger lead you to do something sinful. So we have Ephesians chapter 4, verse 26, which actually talks about, and it's a very, very vivid description, not giving place to the devil. So anger, while it is a very, very common emotion, it very easily can be used to give place to the devil. That's why Paul said, don't let the sun go down on your anger. Don't give yourself a place to the devil. You can learn that from Absalom. I mean, his sister was treated terribly. No one would disagree with that. But it was his response that started this whole spiral in his life that ultimately led to his death. But let's think about another one. Let's consider focusing on the inward. Let's look in 2 Samuel chapter 14. 2 Samuel chapter 14. Now a chapter later. 2 Samuel chapter 14, looking in verse 25. So we want to talk about focusing on the inward self, not just the outward physical beauty, because one fact about Amnon that I've not mentioned before is given to us in 2 Samuel chapter 14, verse 25. Now in all of Israel, there was no one who was praised as much as Absalom for his good looks. From the sole of his foot to the crown of his head, there was no blemish in him. And when he cut the hair of his head at the end of every year, he cut it because it was heavy on him. When he cut it, he weighed the hair of his head at 200 shekels according to the king's standard. To Absalom were born 3 sons and 1 daughter whose name was Tamar. And she was a woman of beautiful appearance. Physically, everything was fantastic for Absalom. But it appears as if that was about it. Some of you will be familiar with the commentator Matthew Henry. I forget when Matthew Henry wrote. I think it was back in the 1700s. Might have been a little bit earlier than that. But nevertheless, he is most definitely what we would consider an older commentator. And he said, it's really sad that when the only thing that could be said positively about you is your looks, that's pretty sad. So what does God want us to develop? Well, God wants us to develop that inward part of us. Now, interestingly, in the New Testament, more times than not, it is dwelt on with ladies. In fact, we just had last week a lesson on Proverbs 31 with the virtuous woman being far above rubies. And what did a lot of that depend on? Her own inward character and traits. You jump over into the New Testament in a couple of places. 1 Timothy chapter 2. So look with me in 1 Timothy chapter 2, and we're going to read verses 8 through 10, and it's this inward part. 1 Timothy 2, verses 8 through 10, "I desire therefore that men pray everywhere," that's what we're to do, "lifting up holy hands without wrath and doubting, and in like manner also that women should adorn themselves with modest apparel, with propriety and moderation." So the modest apparel is what modifies the actual clothing. But the other two, there's 3 words in total. The first one modifies the kind of clothing, but the other two modify or describe what the heart ought to be like. And then it keeps on going, "with propriety and moderation, not with braided hair or gold or pearls or costly clothing, but that which is proper for women professing godliness with good works." So clothe yourself with goodness. In 1 Peter chapter 3 and verses 3 and 4. And as we're reading this and we're considering it in the light of women, you know, men don't think that you can get nothing from these two passages, because you can. 1 Peter chapter 3, and let's look in verses 3 and 4. "Do not let your adornment be merely outward, arranging the hair wearing gold, putting on fine apparel. Again, I've mentioned this before. Peter is not in any way telling women that they can't do that. Just don't let that be the focus. In verse 4, rather let it be the hidden person of the heart with incorruptible beauty of a gentle and a quiet spirit. Because that is very precious in the sight of God. That's what God wants from us. It's neat, I guess, to be attractive, I suppose. But what really counts is what's in the heart. Adorning ourselves with meekness and goodness. Adorning ourselves with good works. So you set your life to doing that, and you're going to be blessed. You've learned a good lesson in a negative way from Absalom. But we think about, again, kind of that goodness. And we think about just the idea of kindness in 2 Samuel chapter 14. So go back to 2 Samuel 14. This is going to be exactly right after that description of what Samuel was like. 2 Samuel chapter 14. Now we're going to read in verse 28. 2 Samuel chapter 14, reading in verse 28. Absalom dwelt 2 full years in Jerusalem. So he tries to take over the throne. He's driven out of Jerusalem. He comes back. He comes back. David misses him so badly, David brings him back. And he dwelt 2 years in Jerusalem, but he did not see the king's face. Therefore, Absalom sent for Joab. So Joab was one of David's, I believe it was David's nephew, one of the commanders of his army. He sent for Joab to send him to the king, but would not come to him. And when he had sent him again the second time, he wouldn't come. So look at this. So he said to his servant, "See, Joab's field is near mine, and he has barley there. Go and set it on fire." And Absalom's servant set the field on fire. So they won't respond to my request. Let's just go burn something valuable of theirs down. Well, of course, we learn to treat people with kindness and not meanness. And probably none of us have burned a field down. I would imagine none of us have burned it. If you're sitting here and not in jail, you've probably not burned a house down. But we do have the capacity to be really, really mean to people that do us wrong. And you learn from Absalom where that's going to get him. It just seemed like everything, by the time we get through with all of these in just a few minutes, everything just seemed to snowball and snowball and snowball. Every poor decision that Absalom made just kind of dug him deeper and deeper and deeper into what would eventually lead to his death. So, what's an alternative? Well, let's just suggest in Galatians chapter 5 and verse 22. Galatians chapter 5 verse 22, there's two words in Galatians chapter 5 verse 22, then we'll just note Colossians chapter 3 verse 12. But Galatians 5 verse 22, the fruit of the Spirit. So the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness. Kindness. Goodness and faithfulness, gentleness and self-control. But that kindness, you know, looking at people with empathy, looking at people with understanding. Colossians chapter 3, just go, probably won't be too many pages over. Colossians chapter 3 and look in verse 12. It says, "Therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, put on tender mercies, kindness, humility, meekness, long-suffering." We keep on going in verse 13. "Bearing with one another and forgiving one another. If anyone has a complaint against one another, even as Christ forgave you, so you also must do." We forgive one another. We're forbearing with one another, not mean. But as we've got more territory, let's consider this as well. 2 Samuel chapter 15. We won't read this entire reading. But now let's go to 2 Samuel chapter 15. So we cross over into a different chapter now. 2 Samuel chapter 15 and beginning in verse 1. We want to talk about energy, talents, and recognition for the good of other people. for the good of other people. So we talked about the idea of it being good for just simply the cause of Christ in accomplishing good. Now let's talk about just simply for the good of other people and not for something selfish. 2 Samuel chapter 15, starting in verse 1. After this, it happened that Absalom provided himself with chariots and horses and 50 men to run before him. Now Absalom would rise early and stand beside the way in the gate. So it was that whenever anyone who had a lawsuit came to the king for a decision, Absalom would call to him and say, "What city are you from?" And he would say, "Your servant is from such and such a tribe of Israel." Then Absalom would say to him, "Well, look, your case is good and right, but there is no deputy of the king to hear you. So we got no one at the gate here to hear your case. Let me just go ahead and decide it." Moreover, Absalom would say, "Oh, that I were made a judge in the land, and everyone who has any suit or cause would come to me, then I would give them justice." And so it was that whenever anyone came near to bow down to him, he would put out his hand and take him and kiss him. And in this manner, Absalom acted toward all of Israel who came to the king for judgment. So look at this. So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. Now, what was he doing all of this for? He was doing all of this to try to take over his father's rule. So all that we have, I mean again, all that we have, talents, the wisdom, the recognition that we have, even maybe the privilege that some of us have, because we can have different privilege other than maybe just financial privilege. But the privilege and the position that all of us in some way have can be used for the good of others. And you think, again, I told you that we'd bring this up, Romans chapter 12, because this one is similar to looking at 1 Peter. Romans chapter 12, let's look in verses 4 through 8. This is similar to what we saw in 1 Peter. So Romans chapter 12, looking in verse 4. "For as we have many members in one body, but all of the members do not have the same function, so we, being many, are one body in Christ, and individually members of one another." So it establishes a relationship. So once kind of Paul established the relationship, well then what do we do with the relationship? We find out, we've got it defined what we are, but now what do we do about it? Well, look, in verse 6. "Having then gifts differing according to the grace that is given to us, let us use them. If prophecy, in proportion to our faith. Or ministry, let us use it in our ministry. He who teaches, in teaching. He who exhorts, in exhortation. He who gives, with liberality. He who leads, with diligence. He who shows mercy, with cheerfulness." To what end? To making people better. I like this, and you're going to be familiar with it in Ephesians chapter 4. You look in verse 12. Look in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 12. "For the equipping of the saints, for the work of ministry, for the edifying of the body of Christ." All of that, energy, talents, whatever you have, use it for the betterment of others. Serve others. That'll keep you spiritually safe. That'll keep you morally safe. That'll keep you physically safe. Absalom sadly didn't learn the lesson. But moving on, let's consider now 2 Samuel chapter 16, beginning in verse 20. 2 Samuel chapter 16, beginning in verse 20. This is going to be a lengthy reading, but I've already kind of alluded to it. 2 Samuel chapter 16, and beginning in verse 20. So 2 Samuel chapter 16, verse 20, we're going to learn about advisors. Choose your advisors carefully. Don't allow someone to misguide you. So this is where Absalom has worked, and he's worked and he's worked. He's sat at that gate. He has judged cases. He has looked the way that he's looked. Grooming, cutting his hair, made sure that everything looks just right. Now it's time. If I'm going to take over the kingdom, it's time to take over the kingdom. So how do I do it? So chapter 16, verse 20, "Then Absalom said to Ahithophel, 'Give advice as to what we should do.'" Now Ahithophel was a traitor. There's a lot of individuals in this account, and they move around, they switch sides. Ahithophel was previously an advisor to David. But he switched sides and became an advisor to Absalom. Maybe this was just a guy who reasoned that if things are going to turn against the guy that I'm working for, I want to be working for the right guy. We don't know. Maybe that was the case. But he gives this advice. He tells Absalom, look, you need to go and you need to sleep with your father's concubines because he's left Jerusalem. And when he left Jerusalem, he left some of his concubines. And back in that world, back 3,000 years ago, that was the sign to everyone that Absalom was making a claim to the throne itself. He then goes on, Ahithophel, and says how he needs to take over the kingdom. You know, basically you need to get this small force, and this small force needs to go by night. And as you come to it by night, then what you need to do is just slip in and kill David, and all will be well. So he had another advisor, Hushai. Now Hushai was loyal to David, but apparently in the account, he was what we would call the mole. So he goes and he tells Absalom, you need to get as many people as you can muster. You need to go right in the middle of the day and you need to attack David directly. I mean, just go right on. That was what ended up getting him killed. You know, and he says, now you make sure you lead that force. That's what ended up getting him killed. So listen to your advisors. The text doesn't make it entirely clear if Hushai was a plant or if Hushai did it on his own accord. The account isn't even really exact about telling us that Hushai told him this knowing that it was going to get him harmed. This is one of the parts that we're just not entirely sure. But the lesson is still there. No one goes through life without help from people that they trust. Whether it's their friends or it's their parents, whether it's teachers, choose your counselors wisely. Choose the people who give you advice wisely. Proverbs chapter 13, verse 20, just very quickly. Proverbs chapter 13, looking in the 20th verse, and the Proverbs actually are pretty full of information like this. We'll just take the time to check with Proverbs chapter 13 and verse 20. He who walks with wise men will be wise, but the companion of fools will be destroyed. He who walks with wise men will be wise, but the companion of fools will be destroyed. Now, if you're kind of up in the air, how do I know that this is a wise person to ask? Watch what they do. Watch what they do. They'll probably prove it to you. Whether good or bad, you give it enough time, they'll probably prove it to you. By all means, talk to your mom and dad. You're rarely ever going to find anyone who cares more about your well-being, especially parents. I couldn't say this as a blanket rule because I'm married to an educator, but of all of the people, at least in this room, there's not going to be anyone on your side more than your mom and dad. Choose your counselors wisely. Absalom didn't. And he paid a price for it. Now, let's just consider a few more. Have the Lord on your side. Let's go to 2 Samuel chapter 17 now. 2 Samuel chapter 17, let's look in verse 14. 2 Samuel chapter 17, looking in verse 14. So, 2 Samuel chapter 17 now, as we kind of cross over into this account, this is Hushai. So, 2 Samuel chapter 17, looking down in verse 14, here's what it says. So Absalom and all of the men of Israel said, the advice of Hushai the Archite is better than the advice of Ahithophel. Remember, Hushai is the one who said, look, you just go straight at him. That's what ended up getting him killed. Now look in verse 14. This is the only, you know, I'd kind of said, I'm not really sure. This is the only indication that we get, and we can make of that what we will. For the Lord had purposed to defeat the good advice of Ahithophel to the intent that the Lord might bring disaster on Absalom. Have the Lord on your side. Have the Lord on your side. How do you get the Lord on your side? Be a godly person. Devote yourself to the Word. Spend time with prayer. Spend time with the local church. Spend time with godly friends. Pick a godly spouse. Do good works. That's what's going to get you on the good side of the Lord. Don't be against the Lord. I'm not saying that the Lord's going to send people into your life that's going to give you counsel that'll end up killing you. But be on the good side of the Lord. Be on the side of His holy revealed will. And you'll be physically safe. You'll be morally safe. You'll be spiritually safe. You will be safe. But let's keep on going. Time's getting away from us. 2 Samuel chapter 17. Now, beginning in verse 24. 2 Samuel chapter 17, beginning in verse 24. And this is going to go all the way through chapter 18, verse 8. So we'll just be able to add something here. Then David went to Menahem, and Absalom crossed over the Jordan, he and all of the men of Israel with him. Absalom made Amasa captain of the army instead of Joab. This Amasa was the son of the man whose name was Jethro, an Israelite, who had gone on into Abigail, the daughter of Nahash, the sister of Zeruiah, Joab's mother. So Israel and Absalom encamped in the land of Gilead. So David had come to Mahanaim, that Shobi the son of Nahash from Ribath of the people of Amnon, Machir the son of Amiel of Lodibar, Barzillai the Gileadite from Rogalim, brought beds and basins and earthen vessels, wheat, barley, flour, parched grain, beans, lentils, parched seed, honey and curds, sheep, cheese of the herd for David and the people who were with him. So now David moves across the Jordan. Mahanaim is where Jacob wrestled with the angel. Now David is over there waiting, just waiting until he can return and come back to Jerusalem. We get to chapter 18. If you'll notice, just in chapter 18, David numbered the people who were with him, set captains of the thousands and captains of the hundreds over them. David sent out a third of the people under the hand of Joab, a third of the hand under Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, Joab's brother, and one third of the hand of Ittai, the Gittite. And the king said to the people, I also will surely go out with you myself. And when they did that, that then begins the final battle that ends with, down in verses 8 and 9, Absalom being killed. So, respect your family. Let me say it figuratively, very quickly. Don't go to war with them. Don't go to war with them. Proverbs chapter 23, verse 22. Proverbs chapter 23, verse 22. Don't go to war with them. A lot of families have went to war with one another. And the vast majority of the time, there's no reason for it. Proverbs 23:22. Listen to your father who begot you, and do not despise your mother when she is old. Chapter 30, verse 11. Chapter 30, verse 17. Also state this very, very similarly. Listen to your family. Treat your family well. Don't go to war over them. One more. Make life about serving Jesus Christ. 2 Samuel chapter 18, verse 18. Now we finish out. 2 Samuel chapter 18 and verse 18. 2 Samuel chapter 18, verse 18. Finishing out the account as far as we are concerned tonight. Now Absalom in his lifetime had taken and set up a pillar for himself, which is in the king's valley. For he said, I have no son to keep my name in remembrance. He called the pillar after his own name. And to this day, it is Absalom monument. So Absalom understood, I've got no one to pass this on to. Essentially, he makes a monument to himself. All of his life, he served himself. You need to be a servant of Jesus Christ. Paul said it beautifully, Galatians chapter 2 and verse 20. What had he done? He had crucified himself. In Philippians chapter 1, verse 20, Philippians chapter 1 in the 20th verse, Philippians chapter 1 verse 20, here's what Paul had said on this occasion. He made the remark, according to my earnest expectation and hope that in nothing I shall be ashamed, but with all boldness as always, so now also Christ will be magnified in my body, whether by life or by death. And I wanted especially to end on this one. Is Christ magnified in what you do? If He is, you will be safe. Physically, you'll be safe. Morally, you'll be safe. Spiritually. Is the young man safe? Absalom, in a way, taught us everything not to do. And because of it, he wasn't safe. Let's not be that way. Let's look at what he did and then follow these principles that are in Scripture that actually move us in the completely opposite way. We've got a lot of young people. We want them to walk in the way of the Lord, but we want for the rest of us to help them also walk in that way too, so that they can know the Lord, they can know His will, they can put their trust in Him, and they can walk in His ways all the days of their life. That's our prayer. Tonight, if you wish to come up here and talk with us about your journey, beginning and walking in the ways of the Lord, we want you to do that. Charlie's going to lead us. Come up here while we stand and he leads us.